Welcome to Playful Beginnings, a podcast about the magic of play therapy for therapists, students, and anyone interested. In our podcast, we'll explore the deeper understanding of play therapy and the skills we use when working with children.
We hope to help you understand the why behind what we do and how it helps kids heal and grow. I'm Dr. Christy Obiola, a working play therapist and university professor in North Carolina.
I'm Dr. Maggie Parker, a play therapist and professor in DC.
We are so excited today to have someone near and dear to my heart, Dr. Crystal Turner, Texas by way of North Carolina, here to be a guest on our show. And so welcome to Playful Beginnings, Crystal.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
We're excited. I met Crystal through Christy, and it was one of those like instant, like, oh, I love you. Let's do this. Like, you are so on top of things and know what you're doing and are so kind and thoughtful and just all around good human being.
Thank you. That's so kind. Thank you. Yeah, I have loved just being within the play world because I've met just some incredibly amazing people, including you too. So I feel really lucky and honored to be here.
Yes. Do you want to start by telling us a little bit about your play journey? How did you find play therapy? What made you decide to go down this route? What is it about play that speaks to your heart?
Yes, I would love to. I don't get to, like, I have no reason to just tell this story to anyone, so I never get to share it. Yes, actually, Christy, you're very instrumental in how I got here. Actually, we officially met in interviews. You were my interviewer, and it was from there, I feel like I just clicked with you in interviews there. And after that, when I got in for orientation, you were assigned as my advisor. And I'll never forget, we were in orientation and I was literally sitting behind you and I emailed you, hey, can we meet, in the middle of orientation, not paying attention. And you said yes. And so we met and I shared with you that I had been creepily stalking you through Google, but like that I had figured out you had gotten an award for your work.
I did.
And it was around adoption. And so being somebody that is adopted, that just really spoke to me, is with adoption and then with kiddos. And those were I was really interested in working with kids. And so just in all of my furious like Googling and research, I was like, this sounds amazing. So when we met, we spent so much time in your office just talking about things that you were doing. And it was just like music to my ears and it felt like I was in the right spot. And I think my love for play therapy really just took off from that. You let me join your research team out at an elementary school. And so I got to be just immersed in CTRT is what you were working on at the time. And you also offered to let me start seeing kiddos there and you would give me one-on-one supervision. And so seriously, like I can't tease apart my love for play therapy and how I got into it with my love and respect for you and how you and I became mentor and mentee. And so, yeah, that's just really, I think, where my journey started, and it's not stopped since. So.
Yeah. And then I launched her out of our nest and sent her to UNT to get launched there to really grow as a play therapist in a program with more resources at the time than we had here.
How you brought it to me, because at the time I had never even considered a PhD program at all, and I certainly never considered going to Texas or coming to Texas. And you had mentioned like, here, all the people that taught me are there, you know, go learn from them. And you emailed Dee, like on the spot, we were in your office one day and you emailed Dee because we were going to Texas APT, I mean to APT, which happened to be in Dallas. And Dee emailed back and we met and it just kind of took off from there. And I also met Dr. Peggy Ceballos there as well and haven't looked back since.
Well, I wonder too. You know, we talked about this with Dee a little bit, Christy, but what was it about Crystal that you were like, you need to go get your doctorate?
Crystal is a super thoughtful individual and has so much curiosity. I felt like she had so much interest to learn more. She was also really open to feedback, to opportunities. She's also she can make things happen. So like, I don't think that's what made me think of like getting a PhD, but just in my relationship with Crystal, like her desire to spread the word about play therapy, but also to help others like find their niche in the field of counseling, in particular her peers of color, and really helping them find a home within either play therapy or the counseling field, I think has always stood out to me. She's also an amazing clinician. And so I felt like her desire to grow, her desire and passion to like have a big impact on whatever community she decides, if that's children of color, if that's adoptees, if that's kids in schools, if that's wherever it is, was strong. And so, yeah, I think that's why I suggested it to her, as just so she could see that the field was wide open for her. Because I think she initially just narrowly thought, I'm going to be a counselor, yet everything she was saying to me was like bigger than being a counselor in clinical practice full time. Even if that's where she, if that's the lane she chooses now, I just wanted to, her to know the field was wide open and she really could create her own destiny and her own opportunities. And so I think that is what stood out to me in our interactions together at the time. So
I loved every single.
I wasn't wrong.
You weren't wrong.
I wasn't wrong. She's great and amazing.
Thank you. I loved every minute of that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was really, it's also, she like was one of my first mentees as a faculty member, because her interview was my first semester here. It's always interested me on the other side. So, you know, like I was fresh out of my doc program and here I had the student really excited, wanting to work with me, had new stuff about me before I, you know, like even introduced myself. And so, yes, that can be flattering, but it was also like, oh, wow, I can make an impact, right? Like all these people who made an impact for me, now I have the opportunity to reciprocate that back to future play therapists. And so, like, it was such a huge honor and I was excited Crystal chose me. So, aww. And we still have a mentee mentor relationship, friendship. We talk not as regularly as we would want, but we do continue to like seek each other out, ask questions. Crystal was a big part of our redesign for our playroom and some other stuff based on her work for her dissertation, which we hope she's going to share with us today. And so, yeah, so it's I'm so grateful for how people pass in and out of our lives and we get connected with.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I had an amazing time and I think it really pushed just who I became in my counselor identity, but more than that, just in my identity. I've never been in a space where talking about culture so freely was not only okay, but encouraged. And add to that, in that same space with white people, like it just wasn't something that I had experienced before. And while being in just spaces with Christy, when we would talk one-on-one after class or after when we were at the schools, just wherever we were talking, we would say things or she would say things that I didn't know was okay to even talk about, just like in day to day, let alone having a white person initiate that conversation. And it really just kind of opened up like, oh, these conversations need to be had. Like they need to be had by more than just me and people who look like me.
Well, and I think like, you know, it's interesting what you're saying too about culture and identity and how this applies. And I'm sure that's really scary to come into, you know, a PWI, predominantly white institution, and be like, actually, I do want to talk about this, and how scary that would be and the courage that it takes. And then also the safety that you felt in that relationship that you could share those things. Yeah. And that's so important.
I mean, like that's such an understatement. I mean, seriously, that is so important. We're talking about culture just kind of mixed in for kids, no less, and that kids see culture. We maybe didn't talk about it as explicitly as that, but in the things that you were saying, that like kids have this awareness, that kids see these things, that they see everything. We shouldn't hide it from them. We shouldn't pretend like it's not happening. And that just like clicked something for me. I'm adopted myself and came from a family where my biological family, kids were meant to be seen, not heard. And so then to hear this narrative where not only should kids be heard, they should be respected in what they're saying was just mind blowing in so many ways. So yeah, I could go on and on about that. But still trying to find just kind of things that matter to me, spaces that matter to me, where I can be free to be me and to find and to be free to create a space where other people can be free. I'm just trying to figure out what that looks like for myself and for my community.
I think it's so hard because I think ultimately what all of our goals are to help kids. And we see kids that are hurting because of messages that they've been receiving for so long.
Because the reality is, kids are seeing this and they still want to have these conversations. They still want to show up, right? And they're
Absolutely.
innocent and they're beautiful selves of, like, yeah, you have more melanin than I do. Like, if I look at our skin, we look different, right? But like, and I'm curious about that. Why is that? Let me ask those questions in play therapy. And if we're so afraid to have those conversations, we really rob them of such beautiful opportunities. And how do we help facilitate that, right? Like, I don't want to cancel opportunities to facilitate those conversations in our play spaces. And I want my students and I want, supervisees and clinicians in the field to still have opportunities to have those conversations because.
And so I do think it makes it really hard for people to say or to ask questions or to show curiosity or to even just reflect on what they've been known what they've known to be true their whole life. It's hard to challenge that for them if they say something that feels real to them because that's what they've known, and yet they're canceled for it because they don't know another way.
I appreciate it. And I just have a like questions, and we haven't talked about these, but it's just like as we're discussing it, and what I really hope that we have a strong enough relationship that like I can edit this out if you don't feel comfortable. Because in some ways I feel like I'm asking you to teach me, and I don't want that to be how that's not my intention. But so much of the feedback that I've gotten about play therapy when I'm talking here, and I've been really challenged by people that I really respect. And I often don't know if I'm answering it in a way that is culturally relative and with cultural humility, excuse me. Many African American children really struggle with playing because it's not safe. And so some of the questions I've gotten is like, does this work with African American children? And I'm like, yes. Like there's been research to say that yes, it does. And I don't know if it's inherently because children can experience us because of the way in which we show up in this space as safe. I don't know. So those are some of the questions I was curious, like how you've like understood or conceptualized or kind of approached some of those aspects.
Yeah, I think, well, shout out to Dr. LaKavia Taylor and her study being, I think, still the only, what is it, quantitative based study on Black children in play therapy, which is so sad. But she, I think what we got from that is like, yes, she did the study and it proved to be helpful for, I think they were looking at total behavior problems, externalizing or internalizing.
Emotional, social
Oh,
emotional.
socio emotional. Yes, thank you. And socio emotional concerns, and it proved to be effective. But I think what what I really took from that, and what really kind of helped lead to my dissertation, is that they made some adaptations, that they made some changes in the room, to that spoke a little bit more, I think, to Black children's culture, or that was a little bit more representative, I think, of the experiences that they saw, even if they weren't a part of said culture. For example, I'm not religious at all, but I, as a child, I've always known what religion meant to the Black community. So I just mean they added, she added items into the room that spoke a little bit to that. And I think that's really what I think sparked my dissertation, was because to answer your question, Maggie, I don't really know, but I do know what we had before. Like, yes, we know that things could get done for any child in terms of processing their experiences, but those rooms as they stood weren't the most reflective of every different experience and every different child's experience. And I think adding more words, if we're believing that their items, the toys are words, adding more words help them to express themselves a little bit more and to be able to, even if they didn't feel like their counselor was completely understanding what was coming up for them, they were able to make sense of it through their own kind of processing. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know, but I appreciate play therapy as it was. That's why I'm in it. That's why I got into it. So as it was, I appreciate play therapy 100%, particularly child-centered play therapy. And I've not had a kid where I felt like this isn't working. This isn't things coming from this. And that's been regardless of any different demographic that that kid might hold. So personally, I say that it works for me in my experience. Anecdotally, it's worked for every child that I've worked with. I don't know.
But it does sound like, how do we help facilitate more opportunities, right? For me to identify in the room is a really important quality when we're thinking of setting up our play therapy spaces. If that's child center, if that's whatever approach, like how representative is our space and of the community we serve? And sometimes I also think we restrict ourselves by the community we serve. Do we give children in our spaces opportunities to explore different cultural aspects, different ex you know, like different just even exposure to things that may be in that they've not seen before, right? Like how do we help facilitate that? And I think that is one of the really great things about your dissertation study and the research you've done is that that's really where your lens has come from. So will you talk to us a little bit more about your dissertation study?
So my dissertation, it's so layered because it was like a three step part. The first step, and I can't talk about the third part without going to the beginning. So the first part was actually born out of a conversation that I had with Dee my very first week in the doc program. We met and she asked me like what my interests were, and I said I wanted to work with Black children. But that I also really wanted to look at the playroom itself, and I wanted to look at something a little bit more culturally inclusive because I thought where things were, it had some room to grow, essentially. And that was, again, week one of my doc program. And she had mentioned that they had already had some plans and works with some previous students, and that it didn't pan out the way that they were wanting to. So they were ready to kind of spark it back up with, I guess, a new team. And so that's how the whole process started. And Regine Chung, Dr. Regine Chung out of Niagara University, was a part of the team already that Dee was already working with before I even got there. And so I hooked up with Regine and we just talked about kind of what our similar interests were. And then Dr. Elizabeth Aguilar joined there. So that's important because we really all centered around like, hey, something is missing, but we can't quite put a finger on what it is, but something doesn't feel like it's really capturing experiences for all kiddos. And so we, oh gosh, just spent hours trying to figure out, okay, how are we going to best go about what are we trying to find here? What gap are we trying to fill within play therapy around culture? And Dee, in her wisdom around research, because that's not my area of expertise, brought up the Delphi study or doing a Delphi study to get expert opinions on what makes a playroom more culturally inclusive and why that felt important for us to just kind of not do it. Just the four of us, but to include other people was because that's inherently a reduction of culture. Like, even though the four of us are all very diverse in our ethnicities and our races, just saying that the four of us are experts on culture really feels like it's minimizing experiences from everybody all over. So we reached out to a lot of different people. The Delphi study was born on multiculturalism in the playroom, and that kind of sparked, okay, well, we want to actually make this playroom. We're getting all these recommendations of what toys shouldn't be a part of the room or what toys should be based on culture. Our whole point of this is we really want to recreate the room. So we distilled all of the comments that we got, and it was a lot of comments that we got from that study and their considerations. And it was so helpful. And so from that, we created a considerations list, basically, on how to be more intentional, I guess, about the items that you selected. But again, we wanted to go further than that. And so after that, an article, Chung, I think Chung et al. 2022. After that article was like, okay, next steps is to actually build the room. And I remember I chatted with Dee and about because she was my major professor. And so I was chatting with her about my dissertation still going to be around working with Black families. And so I wasn't quite sure where to go with this or what we were going to do with it. And it was through a conversation that I had with Dr. Natalia Lindo, where I kind of just expressed like I feel like a sense of responsibility to do something for Black children because I'm Black and it feels like I can't submit an article. I can't do research studies that doesn't promote the health of Black children. And she really helped me see why can a multicultural playroom help do that? Why did, Black children are still going to be a part of the study will still be for Black children, but it will be for also for all children. So that was, I took that to D and we ran with it from there. And we spent something like, I don't know, I think D said she calculated to upwards of 80 hours of pouring over toys, pouring over items, pouring over the considerations, doing like unofficial interviews with just random people that we knew, not play therapists, but just random people asking, like, hey, what toys felt like it was connected to your culture when you were younger? And then taking those considerations. And then when we finally got the full list, we poured through every single item. And we asked a fourth question that was added to D's, I guess, three original questions that she had in terms of selecting an item. And so we added a fourth question, how does this item help you connect, help the child connect to their cultural self? And we answered that for every single item that we purchased, or that we were recommending to be purchased. And then from there, created the list and then created the playrooms. And it was, I get chills talking about it. It was easily the greatest experience of my collegiate academic life. The hours that we spent, almost every doc student came out to help us build the room. We had master students that were helping us too. We had a couple of undergraduate students that were working for CPT that were helping us. We spent a full day transforming eight rooms for my study at two clinics and then an early education room. Yeah, and so it just was beautiful. And so that led to my study. So those are the three different, these are the three different parts. My study was, okay, so we have these rooms. What now? Like, what are they gonna facilitate? What are they gonna encourage children to do? Or are they gonna encourage children to do anything? Are we trying to make children do anything different? So what we did was we, out of the eight rooms that we had, we kept four, what we're calling historically recommended playrooms, i.e. Landreth's recommendations. And then we transformed four to be what we were calling the multicultural playroom. And my study was wanting to know, does the multicultural room, do children have more cultural verbalizations, more cultural behaviors and exploration? And do they even play more in the multicultural room as compared to the historically recommended room? And so we unfortunately could not do a random assignment because kiddos were already being seen at the clinic. So we couldn't, it's a quasi experiment. So we couldn't make it as official as I wanted it to be, but it's a first of its kind. So I'm like, hey, I love it. And the results were amazing. The results suggested that children, regardless of their demographics, had more verbalizations and behaviors in the multicultural room, that they explored more, particularly with their behaviors in the multicultural. They had more cultural behaviors, meaning that they had more play that was focused around a cultural identity that they had, and that they either that they had or that they were curious about in the multicultural room in comparison to the historically recommended room. So yeah, it was really just kind of telling kind of the so what behind that is that if we're looking at kids holistically, if we're wanting to understand kids within the context of their experiences, should we not provide a room that allows them to explore all parts of their experiences? And I really feel like the multicultural rooms helped do that. And so that's kind of what we got out of it.
I just think it's like fascinating hearing you talk about it too, is like, regardless of identity, that children are able to go in and explore. Because so often I think parents and caregivers are like, don't talk about that. Don't. And it's like, well, they're curious because they're hearing these messages. They're seeing people that are different. They're in classrooms and we're not all the same, even though we're, we look different. And so being able to explore those things, I'm sure, is such a opportunity that was not provided.
It was really cool, especially because I don't know, we had to really redefine what culture means. 'Cause I think when people hear the word culture or multiculturalism, they immediately go to race and ethnicity, and that's not what we were wanting to just highlight. And so we actually had a list of different cultural identities that we were keeping track of. And some of them I think people don't even recognize or can be considered a cultural identity. So for us, or for me at least, I think it really helped me see like, okay, while I might have like pressing situations happening that are more obvious because of my that are directed towards my race, like I'm Black and I can't hide that, there are other cultural there are other concerns that people have that related to their culture that we might not ever know, but the kiddos might not know that they are trying to process that, but they're going in that room and they're making sense of it. I mean, one kiddo that we had talked about, like played out like their family life, and just kind of how their role as, I think she was middle sister. I think she's either middle or youngest sister, but their role in their family life and how that was so important to them, played that out in their session and really used the items to, especially some of the newer items that we put in, really used the items to make sense of their family and their family culture. And we had other kiddos that, of course, yes, were related to their race. Obviously, the food was a huge, huge selling point for a lot of the kiddos. They really gravitated to seeing a lot of the foods. One kid that we had, I wasn't there for this, and I'm so disappointed that I missed it, but we were actually doing a group training video. I think it's out now, actually, by the way, if you're interested. We were doing a group training video, and one of the little kids that we had as a participant for that video was Asian, and he went into the multicultural room and saw we had a katana in there, like a samurai sword, I think. And he flipped out and told his play therapist at the time, like, I'm Asian and this is my from my culture, and like just was really excited to be able to share a part of his culture with his therapist. And that just like little moments like that, I mean, yeah, it was big.
They're magical. We've had some of those moments in our playrooms where we have some clothing with different prints on them from different cultural groups. And a little girl who was adopted transracially, right? Like sat and had a whole conversation about, I can be African and I can be American. And she like would put clothes on and off of identifying both. And then she's like, and then she put like half of one and half of the other. And she's like, and I can be African American, right? I need to show my mom I'm African and American. And right, like, where do those happen if we don't provide opportunities? Like you said, if there's not space and there's not materials that help them have those explorations, because who is going to
Absolutely.
allow her to have that opportunity without, you know, time in the space in the playroom to do that?
I mean, yeah, I so agree with that. I mean, I think again, I think the playrooms as they stand facilitate so much. I think they garner so much exploration from kiddos that if you never did anything to the rooms and you left them as they were, I think all kiddos would get something from it. But if we don't have to limit it, why limit it? If there's space for it to grow, why not grow it? And I think, you know, every single play therapist that was a part of the study, even some that were not a part of the study, but that was just happened to be using the rooms, every single one of them had an anecdote about something different that their child explored. And a lot of the kiddos were seen prior to, because they were just clinic kids, so they were seen prior to redoing the rooms. And we got past, like, my dissertation specifically built in kind of that exploration time. So we got past that, and kiddos were still gravitating towards the items, even if the items didn't outwardly seem to be representative of that kid's assumed culture. Kiddos were still gravitating to some of the items and then asking questions about them, asking questions about, like, what's this for? What does this do? Which, yes, you'll find that with a lot of other toys, but these that had a cultural connection to them, it allowed the kids to ex safely explore and ask questions about other cultures that they probably felt afraid to ask before. So I don't know. We had one little girl who she was a part of our, like, the initial part of my study, which was to define the terms, like the definitions that we were using. And so we were coding her video, and she was a little white girl. She was probably about 4. We had put in a doll, a new baby doll. She was black with textured hair, a lot like mine. And the little girl, like, held the doll, would walk around with the doll, nursing her, like nurturing her, while still doing all of her other play. And she eventually said to her therapist, I'm holding this doll because you know how black girls are, they can be really mean. And I think anybody who heard that could see that that's like, oh, that's offensive, or oh, that little girl's learning racism, or what have you. And you would miss the part that she's nurturing this doll that she seems as representative of black people in her life, or anybody that may have bullied her. And so you like that nurturing still, with that kind of trying to figure out why this person or in her life or whoever it was responding to her in certain ways. I just don't think he would have gotten that without that doll being present. I don't think you would have gotten that level of, I don't know, insight into what was coming up for that kiddo. I think you could have easily dismissed it as that child either was had racist people in her life and she was adopting that, or that child had black people in her life who was mean to her and she was adopting being mean to them because it was a response to that. And you would miss just the innocence in that. And so, yeah, I don't know. The study for me, the rooms, the anecdotes that have come out of it have just been, I don't understand how we could not keep pushing this forward.
And as you think about our world getting more and more diverse, right? Like, so if we look at stats, you know, just about our society as a whole, what we know is that people have more intersecting identities today than we have historically. And so if we don't, you know, we talk about keeping up with the times digitally, we talk about keeping up with the times other ways that, like, how do we then also not provide more opportunity because kids have more exposure? Kids will always have curiosity, right? And want to make sense of their world. And if our playrooms don't represent the world that they live in, what are we robbing them of the opportunity to explore?
And conversely, too, like one of the things that I really wanted to highlight with my team when we were doing this is, yes, we're wanting to replace some of the items, but I don't want to remove what is American culture or what is white culture. I don't want to, I'm not at all suggesting that these rooms are too white, that they're not going to be helpful for other children. So we need to completely replace it. Because then what happens to the white kiddos who did see themselves in that room? And so for me, it was never about like, kind of removing American culture or removing white American culture. It was just now, can we add to it? Because I wanted kiddos who were in that room and probably felt very immersed in their in representations of their life. I still wanted them to be able to be curious and to be able to have opportunities to explore other parts. If that little girl was in a historically recommended room, I'm sure she would have been able to kind of make sense of her experiences, but she was able to tap into other cultures and try to make sense of other cultures just by having that doll there with her. And so, yeah, I definitely think there's an importance of making sure that all kids feel representative, including the kids that were already represented in the room.
It's not about excluding, it's just about bringing in and
Yeah. And of course we can't represent every single culture. And I think that's been like the hardest part is feeling like you're reducing or erasing a culture if you remove an item that is specifically targeted towards one culture. But I think what we landed on with it is because there was so much diversity in the items and the cultures that we represented, perhaps that's enough to send the message of like, okay, if these varying cultures are represented here, maybe this place is just for maybe this place is just for honoring all cultures. And even if I can't see mine specifically, because I can see others, I know that at least I can feel free to talk about mine in here. And I think that's a step in the right direction. May not be the answer, may not be what we want to land on. I certainly don't want to end it there, but I think it's at the very least a step in the right direction towards we can talk about culture. We can talk about it openly and freely. And not only can we should.
well, we don't want the space to become so overwhelming that it feels
Right.
like you can't find the things you need to talk about. So I do think that deciphering what is important, you know, and like how do we try to represent as much as we can, but also not overwhelm kids is a really important perspective. Like we don't want bins and buckets of millions of things in the playroom. They'll spend more time just finding stuff than they will play. And still honor kind of those foundational parts of how a playroom is set up is what I'm hearing you talk about there.
Yeah, for sure. And it's something I don't think I'll ever stop reflecting on it and figuring out like, oh, we should have done this differently, or oh, we could do this now.
Well, thank you so much.